Hi, this is Matthew Gattozzi from the future. Before you jump into this awesome podcast episode, I want you to know that some things have changed around here since this episode was published. The show was called How to Build an Audience, and now it's called How to Market Your D2C Brand. The setup is the same, but we now have more of a focus on who we are talking with and what we are actually talking about. So if you're confused, hopefully that clears it up. Lastly, we also changed our company name from Gattozzi Collective to Gudo Studios. A lot of rebranding has happened since season one of the podcast, but thanks so much for supporting us as we grow and change. Enjoy this podcast episode, and don't forget to subscribe to the show so you can listen to the new episodes coming out soon. Okay, thanks. Enjoy. For so long, many people couldn't read or write. They could only speak. Stories would be passed down from generation to generation. Audio is in the human DNA. One of the most powerful ways to communicate your ideas is through speaking. Great speakers and storytellers capture people's attention. One form of audio that is popular in the 21st century is podcast. Even from my own experience, growing a podcast audience and even creating something worth listening to is not easy. But Jeremy Enns has cracked the code on how to create great podcasts that builds businesses and audiences.
But when it comes to, you know, blogging, YouTubing, podcasting, I think the thing that not enough people realize is that these are all platforms. Like, building an audience is built on compounding returns, where I like to say for podcasting, but again, for anything, like, you could spend a year doing it and it probably would just feel like it wasn't worth it. But if you stick with it for 3 years, it could entirely change your life.
You're listening to How to Build an Audience, the podcast that tells the stories of how some of the top entrepreneurs, marketers, and communicators built a following around their businesses and brands. I'm your host, Matthew Gattozzi. Today, I am talking with Jeremy Enns. Jeremy is the founder of Counterweight Creative, which is a podcasting creation studio for people in the health and wellness space. The shows they have produced have amassed over 20 million downloads and have been featured on news outlets like Forbes, CBS, NBC, CNN, and many more. Let's just say Jeremy is good at making great podcasts. Before Jeremy's success in podcasting production, he was lost after high school as to what to do next with his life.
I was someone who grew up playing music. I mean, my parents made me take piano lessons, and I think I did a couple other things. I never actually played in the school band, which is kind of funny. I always like hated the idea of that. I was forced to do piano lessons, but I think it was in grade 9, I discovered guitar, and I was really excited about guitar. So I started playing acoustic. And of course, like most high school kids who are into playing guitar, quickly that turned into electric guitar. And I got playing in like metal and hardcore bands. And so after I graduated high school, I spent a couple of years playing in bands while just working, you know, whatever jobs. I was someone who never really had a clear idea of what I wanted to do after high school. And of course, there's like this grade 11, 12, everybody's asking me like, so what's next for you? And I was always just like, no idea. I always hated the idea of working for someone else. So I liked the idea of working for myself, but I didn't know, like most people probably at that stage, that there actually were all these opportunities out there. And I mean, a lot of those only developed in those, you know, 5 years after I graduated, where the internet really started getting a lot more, a lot easier for people with, you know, not coding experience or anything like that to get set up and build businesses online. So yeah, I was playing in bands and was just like figuring out recording stuff on my own at home in like GarageBand and hacking together all these like free tools and whatever and this cheap equipment. And at some point I realized like, oh, you can, there's actually school that you can go to learn how to be an audio engineer. And so for me, a lot of that was around, I always loved the technical side of things. I love playing guitar and singing and like playing all these instruments and love that side of things. But I also like really nerded out about all the technical behind the scenes stuff. So when I found that you could go to school for this, I was like, oh, this is it. This is the thing. And so I was living in the prairies in the middle of Canada at the time, and I moved out to Vancouver for school. And that's how I got into to audio engineering as a profession, I would say. I mean, I went to school and then interned for free for a year after that, a couple of days a week while working a full-time job, and then kind of gave up on it. And then it wasn't until a few years later where I realized, oh, these skills actually transfer over to this podcasting thing.
After sound engineering school, Jeremy was more focused on event sound and recording artists. His journey to podcasting was a little unexpected.
So I started the business. It was under a different brand name then that was specifically geared to musicians and so recording albums, producing albums, that kind of thing. Did some live sound as well. And so it wasn't until much later, and I kind of just let that business go. It was still, you know, I still did a little bit of recording here and there, but it, well, I wasn't really like pursuing it at that point. I had just, you know, was working any jobs. I was doing landscaping to pay the bills. And actually in that span as well, between actually in 2014, I took a year off to go traveling. So a friend and I, we bicycled across Europe and then went to Southeast Asia for 4 months. And
it That's was amazing.
Kind of, it was kind of on this trip where I realized, oh man, I want to do this all the time. Like, what if I could travel all the time? And I didn't know that digital nomads were a thing, that location independence was a thing. On this trip, I had met a couple people who did live in other countries and who had businesses, but they were like physical manufacturing businesses. And these were like 55-year-old guys who were living in Vietnam. I remember meeting a couple of them and I was like, okay, well, that's, I'm not going to do that. And so, but then when I got back, I went back to working a landscaping job, and on the first day of the job, I realized, oh, we're allowed to listen to music or our phones or whatever on the job. And so I'd listened to audiobooks in the past at jobs like that. But at this point, I was like, oh, I've heard about these podcast things. I wonder what's out there. And so I like go home and open up iTunes and just look up, like, I think I searched creative business or something like that, because that's what I was thinking. I always identified as a creative, and I was thinking, like, how can I get paid for this? How can I create a business around this? I didn't know to search, you know, digital nomad or location independence or anything like that. But I was like, okay, if I can like start something for myself, maybe there's some way to do that. And of course, like a billion podcasts pop up, even back in 2015. There were a lot on online business and creative business and all these things. And so I remember the first show I subscribed to was called Creative Warriors, and the host was Jeffrey Shaw. And I came across something of his recently. I think he's still doing it. He has a pretty big brand. I think he's written a couple books, I'm pretty sure, but I haven't followed him for 5 years at this point. But I just like binged through everything. And so I was at work, I could listen to podcasts all day long. And so I was listening like literally at 1.5 or 2 times speed for probably 9 hours a day, and like work days, weekends, like for a full year, all I did was like listen to podcasts about online business. And then eventually I got kind of burnt out on that. So I moved into other stuff. And at some point along there, I was trying to actually start out by building a photography business, online blog and do the courses and all that kind of thing. And at some point I realized, oh, my real goal here is not to pursue photography. I would love that, and I still enjoy photography, but my goal was to be able to travel and be able to support myself while I was traveling. And I realized that, okay, growing a blog, growing an audience, creating the products, like that's probably going to take 2 or 3 years optimistically to get it to the point where I can support myself traveling. I could instead sell my time podcast editing. I have all these skills and I could go like next month as soon as I get the clients. And so once I kind of pivoted to that, I think I went home from work after I had this idea the one day. I was like, wait, I should revisit this podcast editing thing that I've kind of thought about, but it never really clicked for me. I went home and set up a profile on Upwork. And I think within 2 days I had my first client. And then within 6 months I had enough clients to quit my job. And I actually headed to the UK, where I spent a few months and ultimately a full year traveling before coming back home.
You listened to podcasts for over a whole year before you were actually creating your own. So how does the actual training and understanding, like learning and growing as a, you know, for you as a podcast listener, but you were understanding how stories were being created. How much does that consistency of training and building yourself up helped you with building your own confidence, but then also building your business to a point where you're like, I could actually charge for something like this because I know what makes a podcast really great and makes a podcast really bad because I've listened to a lot of them for many, many hours.
I think everybody has this imposter syndrome when you're first starting out and you're competing against people who might have been doing it for 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 years, whatever it is. And so especially on a platform like Upwork, where there are literally hundreds or thousands of podcast editors from around the world. I remember, like, you always think of the people in the Philippines or India who are charging, you know, literally $3 an hour. But the people who I was much more had this imposter syndrome around was there were people in Eastern Europe who on their bios, they're saying like, I have 25 years experience in professional recording studios and they're charging $15 an hour. And I'm like, Okay, like I know I can like sell myself in the way that I'm a better option than somebody who might not speak English as their first language. I mean, a lot of people in Romania, Bulgaria don't speak English as their first language, but there's, you know, often a bias against people from India or the Philippines, which may or may not be deserved, but a lot of, you know, US-based business owners might have that and be reluctant to hire someone there. But then you're looking at someone from Europe and you're like, okay, well, they probably speak pretty good English. They've been doing this in a Western recording studio type setting for 15, 20, 25 years, and they're only charging $15 an hour. And I'm like, well, what do I have to offer beyond that? And so I think at that point I was really falling back on this, like, I have listened to so many podcasts and like studied them in a way because I love audio and because I love storytelling. This was actually something I had a realization in that year when I was listening to all these shows, and some dots connected for me where I realized that from my earlier days, like playing music and recording music to photography, I always liked writing, and then getting into the podcast side of things and becoming obsessed with them. Like, something always felt like similar to them. And it felt like each one was, yeah, it was a different kind of platform that it was taking place on, a different medium, but there was something that, like, that was a through line through it that I really gravitated to. And I realized that this was the storytelling aspect of it. And so for me, that's always been something that I've been really tuned into, I think, and have, you know, just continue to always be fascinated by that and looking at, you know, how stories are structured and how we can take, you know, more complex story techniques and theory and like put that into, you know, a blog post or a podcast that might not be a whole narrative actual, you know, piece of content. And so I think coming in with like that amount of time put in listening to podcasts, as well as my background as a trained audio engineer, that was something that, again, like some people you're competing with on Upwork, like, do have that experience, but most people taught themselves. And so with those two things, I was like, okay, I haven't produced podcasts, but I know audio engineering better than, you know, 95% of people on here. And I've probably listened to more podcasts and studied them more than at least 95% of people on there.
Counterweight Creative, which is Jeremy's podcasting business, focuses on the health and wellness industry. I wanted to know how Jeremy chose this industry, or if this industry found him. I think a lot of people have great skills and they know how they can serve people, but they don't know exactly who to serve.
That's something that I have only in the past year maybe actually finally doubled down on. And really it was, I met somebody at a conference a year into running the business, something like that. And the guy I met, he was the operations person for his wife's business. She's a doctor and she has this massive online business, and they referred me to some other people. And then between the two of them, they have just continued to refer, and that network, it just branched into all these wellness people. And so it was at a point where, you know, 2-3 years into focusing specifically on podcasters, it just continued to be more, every referral was someone in the wellness space almost. And we do have a few people who are outside of that. I would say like 70% of our clients are in the broad health and wellness category. And as a result of working so much with those types of people, like, I know a lot of the content they talk about. I know a lot of, like, my network is very much integrated with all of those people. So it just, I felt like I was fighting this, the advice that everyone gives to niche. And finally I was like, okay, what if we actually just doubled down on this and said, like, okay, this is the group of people that we can actually be the best option in the world for, where, like, there is nobody who is more focused on helping health and wellness podcasters or health and wellness experts use podcasting to grow their audiences. And so, like, if no one else is addressing that, we can be like the one and only, the obvious choice. And so kind of finally, in the past year, I doubled down and said, okay, well, let's focus on this. And I think that that's where we can, like, gain a foothold. And of course, this is the thing with, like, everybody who resists niching always thinks you're, like, closing yourself off to everyone else, when really, like, we still have regular inquiries from people who come in and would be, you know, thrilled to work with us. And it's not like we're turning them away. It's just our marketing is directed at health and wellness people, and other people still find us. We still work with them. We can still get great results for them. But it's just not where we're actually directing our kind of intentional marketing.
But how important is it, now that you have made that jump, to double down on your investment of this specific niche, of this industry? How is it now so much more important, now that you see it, for your marketing and for just your overall, like, push to grow your business, your audience, in terms of clients?
I mean, I think it gets easier to create content when you're clear, and because you can... I don't believe there's much new content. Nobody's coming up with that many new ideas. If any, everything's being remixed from something else. But I think that this is, like, this is where you can really, really dig in and embed yourself in a niche where you're taking all these ideas that already exist elsewhere and you're just translating them for this audience because they probably haven't heard it before, directed specifically at them, to their specific pain points, to their, addressing their experience. And so if you can take all these other topics that you've done the work on learning about, and then like just translating that and funneling that into to a different audience that you've chosen that hasn't been kind of spoken to in that way before, they're going to be, it's like, whoa, I've never heard about this before. This is incredible. This person really gets me. And they're going to think you're this genius when you're really just taking these other things that you heard elsewhere and kind of remixing them and putting a new spin on it for your specific audience.
Jeremy is not afraid of collaborating with other creators and businesses. He most recently put together the Podcast Power Pack, which brings together 17 podcasting expert courses and guides to help people start their own podcasts. I wanted to know how collaboration has allowed him to build his business and clientele.
This is something that I'm really passionate about, and I think that a lot of people, especially when you get into podcasting or content creation or anything like that, of course, we're all aware that there are a dozen or more or like hundreds or however many like marketing podcasts are out there right now for you and this show. There are hundreds or thousands of other shows, and you can choose to view each of those as your competition that are potentially siphoning off people from you, or you can find those people who are like taking a different view of the topic and providing something that's unique and different from what you're doing. It's not competitive, and look to collaborate with those people and say like, well, I don't actually want to talk about that side of things, so I'm not missing out if I share this resource with my people because they're going to benefit as well. And I know that a ton of the people that I follow online, and I've started doing a newsletter this year, and something about newsletters used to be, I had a lot of resistance around it. I couldn't keep it up. Like so many people, it's like, what do I write? What do I include in this? And then I started following all these newsletters where a large chunk of their newsletters was just sharing other people. And I was like, huh, isn't that kind of like, you're just, what are you bringing to the table? But I have really realized that with so much content out there today, like it is insanely valuable to be a trusted curator of content. There is so much out there that it's hard to find if you're looking for something related to marketing and you just want to generally grow as a marketer and get smarter about all things, you know, growing your audience or whatever. Like for you, for example, by doing this podcast, you're offering one side of that where you're, you know, directly giving stories and information to help people level up their marketing. But there's all these other areas. Marketing's a huge topic that no one can be an expert on. And so by saying like, hey, I really liked these five other things this week, these articles that I read, these podcasts I listened to, and you know, you're not going to create that content at any point, and they probably said it better than you would, or maybe a guest on your show might. And so everybody's now coming to you because they're like, oh, Matthew like can find the good stuff and he delivers it to me. I don't need to go out there and search for it and scour the internet for these blog posts. He's like, every week there's five new things that like he's vetted and approved. And I know by, you know, following his newsletter, whatever that is, I'm going to also like benefit from that and get access to those. So I think like whether it's sharing other people's content or then, and that's actually a good way to start actually making connections to people. And then you can start collaborating with them and everybody's like, you know, the rising tide raises all ships kind of.
Absolutely. And yeah, the curation is so key. Would you have any tips for your, like for other people to curate? How have you built your skill as a curator?
I mean, I think it's, it feels like cheating almost because I just subscribe to a bunch of people's newsletters and every week I like go through them instead of scrolling through my Facebook feed. I scroll through my newsletters. I have them in a specific inbox. And so when I've got like 15 minutes where I'm like, okay, I just want to read something, I'll just read through newsletters. And you know, these are all newsletters that I've subscribed to based on my interests and worldview and all those types of things. So I'm kind of banking on the people who are following my newsletter. They probably want a slice of each of these things that's interesting to me. So I'll include stuff on like travel and like long distance cycle touring and things like that. Not, you know, I usually share like five different links and not every newsletter has something related to that. A lot of it is very audience building, marketing, business focused and podcasting as well. But, you know, I do throw that other stuff in there that's just interesting to me because I think, well, if the people who I'm creating this for, they're people who just want a bit more of me and my insight. So I'm going to share those things. If I find something's interesting, I'll share it. And so, yeah, I subscribe to newsletters and a lot of them are just curating other things. And so it's like curating the curators almost. And so you're getting this like best of, if you like someone and you like their thought process, like consume what they're consuming. And, you know, I'll usually just, I use an app called Pocket to just save articles I'm interested in. And then at the end of the week for my newsletter, I'll scroll through my Pocket feed from the past week and say like, okay, well, these are the five best things or the things that I think my audience will be most interested in and just put those in the newsletter.
To scale a business, especially a client service business, you have to get out of your own way. Taking the jump from solopreneur to an actual team is not easy. I wanted to know how Jeremy went from Upwork editor to his own full-fledged team.
I would say it was not as smooth as it might sometimes look from the outside. And I think probably anybody who's especially growing a team, like I think there's, I never worked a corporate job. I always worked for small companies. I had no experience with management or anything like that. None of the bosses I ever worked for had any experience with management. And so which may have been a benefit to me. I don't actually know, but I had very little training or preparation in any of that. And luckily that's something that I think a lot of people hate management, but I actually really like it. And I think it is a challenge, but it's something that excites me. And I have a huge focus on team and team culture and building an environment where, you know, people hopefully actually get opportunities to grow as people and as professionals so that, you know, when they leave the company, they're better than when they came in is one of my big philosophies. And I'm always looking for ways to do this better and don't always live up to that. But that's kind of the driving goal between how I think about team. But it kind of, I mean, like so many people who get into an agency style business, it was out of pure desperation almost that I started expanding. And I hired a couple people on early who were around for a little bit, but I ultimately let go of. And looking back, I entirely realized that I did not know how to communicate expectations and was just not a good boss or a good manager. And it wasn't anything that was wrong with them. It was that I couldn't clearly communicate and convey what I needed from them. And so that's been an interesting thing to look back on. And I mean, there's just always new instances of that, new things coming up. And so I don't think your work's ever done in growing as a manager and learning how to be a better manager. But I got to a point probably 2 years in, I think it was about a year in that I hired that first person or those first couple people. And then I went back to just being myself for a little while. Maybe I had some help doing the show notes side of things, but I was the only one doing the audio editing for the better part of the first 2 years. And I just got to a point where I was just perpetually burned out over a couple months and was just working 7 days a week and way too many hours a week and was just like really feeling it. And it got to the end of the year. I think it was right at Christmas. And I'd spent the previous 2 months in Brazil and had just not seen anything. I'd been in Brazil for 2 months and had basically worked every day from like 7 a.m. Actually, I think I was getting up super early. I think I was waking up at 5:30 a.m. or something like that. And was just like starting work by like 6:37 and working till 8 p.m. and just like not seeing anything at all. And I got home and I was like, okay, in one way I had a good experience there. It was a very interesting time in the business, but I was just like, I can't do this anymore. Like I need to bring on help in some way. I need to get systems in place. And so kind of from that moment on, I was like, okay, I need to get serious about building a team around me. And I may have had at that point when I was going through the burnout, I might've had one or two people helping out as contractors. Everybody now is still contractors at this point. I'm looking to move that to full-time over the next year or two to a smaller team, but more hours from people and an employee role rather than contractors. But I got finished with this trip. It was kind of the new year, so it was like a fresh start. And so I was like really focused on like, okay, this year I really need to level up all the behind the scenes thing. And it did take probably, I would say like a year and a half from there to really, or even 2 years, it really feels like in the past year now that things have really become a lot smoother. And so I bought into a systems specific mastermind where that was the entire focus of the mastermind. And I was in that for about 9 or 10 months and just putting the work in, documenting everything, creating SOPs, setting the expectations for the team and systems for how that was going to work. And so that was a huge benefit in the long run. And, you know, I spent a lot of money doing that and it took a lot of work and it took a lot of time, but it's really interesting that part of it was just building the habit of creating systems. And I am very systems oriented anyways. That's one of the ways I procrastinate is by working on systems and creating new systems. It's like when I don't want to actually do something like creative or something, I'm like, or that requires thinking, I'm like, well, what could I look at like a flow chart or something and like go fiddle around in Asana for a while or Airtable. But once I kind of built up that habit, that's just continued to snowball and compound. And so now things are, I was actually just looking at this last week where I think I spend probably like 10 to 15 hours on the agency side of things now versus probably a year ago, that was like 20 or 30. And a year before that, it would have been like 50. And so it does take time for those systems to all get refined and get into place where everybody's on the same page. But one of the things with when it comes to building the team is those systems have made it so easy to build the team and add people on because everything is defined. It's clear to everyone what they need to do at any given stage. And so that was, and it's consistent. There was like quality issues early on where different people were doing different things and there was no overall process. So systems. I nerd out about them, but I just can't tell people enough to like get on those early because it will come back and bite you if you don't do it when you're still small.
After the break, Jeremy tells us how writing can help build a podcast audience. This show is sponsored by Gatozi Collective. We are a marketing agency based in Austin, Texas, that is a personal marketing team to many businesses. We create photo and video content delivered to you each month to save you time and a massive headache when you're planning your social media for the month. If planning's too much for you, we can also run your social media accounts to give you more time to grow your business. You can visit our website at www.gatozicollective.com. Now, let's get back to the show. As I have followed Jeremy on Twitter and online, I've noticed that he is a great writer. I have learned a lot from his work. People love to hear stories, even on podcasts. I wanted to know how much writing has allowed him to build his own audience.
I started writing at the start of this year. We're in 2020. And so January 1st, I said, okay, I've heard so many people recommend this daily writing challenge to just set that as a goal for yourself and just write something, whether it's one paragraph or 500 paragraphs or whatever it is, like write every day and publish it. And so I started that. I was like, okay, well, I'm gonna do this. And so now we're recording in August and pretty much every day I have written something over the past 9 months almost now, or 8 months, I guess. And so for me, the biggest thing, I was just like, I went into it not expecting to build an audience around it early on. I was just like, okay, so I've heard so many people I look up to recommend this. I'm just going to see what it's about. I do want to improve as a writer. I would like to do more writing in the future. Eventually would like to write a book someday. Don't know what it'll be about, but I know that that's been, even since I was a little kid, my mom says like when I was 5 years old, she was like, I always thought you were going to be a writer from then because you're just like writing all the time. And so I was like, okay, well, let's just give it a shot and see what happens and get in the habit of publishing. And what I realized was that one of the things people do talk about this, but I don't think it gets enough emphasis put on it. And I think a lot of people, when they're putting out content, it's about the building the audience and the thing that you like tangibly kind of get back from it or the attention. But for me, it became so apparent within the first month, I would say, that my thinking was clearer. And I just felt like when I was having conversations with clients, I just had something to fall back on. And I didn't write a lot about podcasting at the start. It was general like business mindset, some audience growth stuff and marketing. Lately in the second kind of half of this span that I've been writing has been more heavily focused on podcasting. But what I realized is it just helped so much in idea generation where, and I've done this before with different kinds of things. And you'll hear this often with like keeping a gratitude journal. When you start keeping a journal, you start noticing things to be grateful for. And the same thing happened with writing, where I was like, well, I need a new topic. Over the next year, I'm going to need 365 topics. That's a lot of things to write about. I better start making note of them. And so as I'm just like walking around, I just keep a note app on my phone open and I'll just write down little things. And so the biggest benefit for me has been, you know, we all make these little observations, especially if you're an entrepreneur. If you have an online business, you're probably a creative person. You're a smart person. And there's all these thoughts that we get throughout the day. And then we like think about them and you're like, oh, that's interesting. But then they just get forgotten or they live on an app in your phone and they never get expanded upon. And so for me, this has been a way for me to like take these things, actually notice them and be like, oh, that's interesting. And then the next day, be able to sit down and write down, even if it's like three paragraphs, if it's 200 words or if it's 1,000 words, and be able to actually like explore what this idea is. And a lot of times those will then branch out into these other ideas. And sometimes they're things that have no, some of my articles, I'm like, well, this is, I don't know, I'm glad I wrote this because it got something out of my head, but it's probably not useful to anyone else, whatever. But I like got that idea out of my head. I explored it. There's nothing else to look at there. So whatever. But a lot of the things have just like continued to kind of evolve my thinking. And the confidence, I think, is something that has become, it's been a really interesting side benefit of it, where going into like client consulting calls and strategy calls before, like all this stuff that's come out of my blog lived in my head, obviously, but now it's like organized. And so now I can think back whenever a client comes with a particular problem, I'm like, oh yeah, I wrote a blog post about this and I already have it all scripted out kind of in my head. I've done the work once of organizing my thoughts. And so now I can like just regurgitate that to the client and be like, well, actually, here's my thoughts about this. This is my philosophy on this. And so for me, that's been a huge benefit of writing. And then the other thing, I launched my first online course program earlier this year called Podcast Marketing Academy. And this is a like, I didn't expect it to be this big, but it's like over 20 hours long of content, plus then additional 90 minute calls over the 16 week period of the course. So it's like a huge course that I'd been kind of putting off for a while. And it wasn't until I said, well, I'm just going to start writing out the course on my blog, at least in a little bit in each of the ideas. And once I started doing that, I did like a 2 or 3 week sprint and all of these ideas kind of came out. I was like, oh, well, this is what the course is about. I had it bullet pointed out. Now I have it written out to some extent, not in as concise a manner as it would be in the course, not as professionally done, but I was like, okay, well now this is really easy just to put together and script out and record the videos because I've already done the work of actually like exploring the ideas and saying like, yes, this is what I believe about podcast marketing or this situation or how to go about this. Like I already have all these things to fall back on. And so that has been, I started doing that for a bunch of other things of like, if I have this idea I want to create a product for or whatever that might be, or have, there's something that I don't know about that people ask me about. I'm like, well, okay, let me do the research and I'll write an article on it. And then I'll know next time someone asks me. And so that has been just like, I didn't expect that at all, but it has been a huge benefit to me.
How is writing helpful for building out the podcasts themselves, right? So like the architecture of podcasts, a lot of them, some podcasts are really just record and it's a conversation, but something like this, I'm doing a lot more writing. So I'm curious with a lot of the editing that you've done, how does the writing and the scripting help build the quality of the podcast, but then also help build an audience around that podcast?
Yeah. So we've done some like fully scripted shows in the past for some clients, not very common because they're just insanely expensive to produce. If you're hiring that out. And so the show that I'm working on right now is aimed at people in the health and wellness space, and it's called Build a Better Wellness Biz. And so kind of like you, there is more of a scripting element. There are like interstitial breaks where I'm going to come in with a kind of scripted section to bridge two different ideas, especially if I cut out like a 10-minute section from the middle of the interview or whatever that might be. And so I think it's interesting because I think writing is just such a useful skill in everything that you do. And like, there's the actual writing element of creating something that's readable and engaging, but it's more like really writing's about sharing ideas and getting them across in a concise way that resonates with people. And for me, you know, probably for some people, they can speak that out. And so maybe for them, they can just turn on the mic and hit record and stuff's going to come out right. For me, that's not the case. I tried doing that with the first episode of this new show. And eventually I was just like, after half an hour, I said, okay, I'm just going to write this out. And it took me like 5 minutes to write out the bit that I just spent half an hour trying to just speak out. And it was like, oh, well, that's easy. And so I think that like, yeah, writing is really understanding like we talked about story structure and narrative structure, but also just how an idea flows into the next. And I am not an expert on this by any means. Like it's something that I want to continue improving. And I love learning about writing and reading about writing and follow a bunch of newsletters about writing. But you know, I think there's a long way to go to be a real expert in that. But just understanding and starting to pay attention to like, okay, I read this article or I listened to this podcast. Why did it hook me? Or maybe there's a podcast that you turned off after 5 minutes and you're like, well, what wasn't working about that? And so I think understanding like how to link ideas together and how to create tension and pique curiosity and keep people engaged throughout, you know, a 45-minute interview, that can help you, you know, structure your interviews in a certain way. Or if it is entirely scripted, know how to like link up ideas and bridge them and have a through line that feels cohesive and coherent through all of it. And so I think for me personally, writing is a great way to do that because you can look at it visually and you can cut and paste things around, whereas audio is a lot harder to work with. And so I think in terms of quality and production, it can be really helpful to have at least some version of a written document, whether that's getting it transcribed and playing around with it there or whatever that might be. I've done that for talks that I've given before, is just kind of talked through my bullet points and then got it transcribed and then played around with the paragraph structures, which has worked well. In terms of growing an audience, I think that, I mean, there's a few ways that people can grow a podcast audience. And I think that a lot of people are relying on podcast apps to do the work for them and on Apple Podcasts to do the work for them. And people, podcasters love to complain about the lack of discoverability. And I just think this is such a stupid argument because everybody struggles with discoverability. Every business ever struggles with discoverability. Every author. There are way more books that get published on the Kindle, you know, every year than there are podcasts that come up. They all struggle with discoverability. Every like musician, every single creative person struggles with discoverability. And it's not the podcast app's job to make it, you know, create some magic algorithm so that every listener, you know, is going to find exactly the podcast that they want. And, you know, that would be great. And I'm not against that. But I think that we can't expect that as creators. And so I don't know where that kind of mindset has come in that that's the problem. I think the problem is that people need to go out and find listeners for their show and get in front of them. And I think that writing is a great way to do this, where one of the things that I'm going to be doing with the new show is creating much more like blog post form content, supplemental content to the podcast that, you know, somebody who's a reader, they may not even need to listen to the podcast. They can just read the blog post and they'll get everything that they can out of it. But if they listen or read through a few and are like, oh, I wonder what the audio version's like, eventually they might transition over there. And same with like search engines. Audio is becoming a much bigger part of search engines. And there are, you know, the technology is coming along where that is going to be completely searchable in probably 5 years, if not sooner. But for now, still like having a lot of written content to supplement that is a way for people to find your website and also the podcast. So I would say that that is really important. And then the other thing would be even just in writing social captions, like this is something that it like writing is all you've got there. Like you've got a graphic and some written text. And so if you can't write well, that says something about, whether or not it actually says something about the quality of your podcast, it communicates that to people who are browsing that, where if your grammar's poor and you don't know how to write a hook and you don't know how to pique curiosity and you can't give them what the benefit of what they're going to get from listening to the podcast through text, it's going to be hard to actually get them to listen to the podcast.
You talked about going out and finding audience members. So I'm going to selfishly ask this question because I'm always looking for more people to listen to this podcast. How do you do that? How do you go out and find people that are beyond your network, right? Because in some ways I feel like, okay, there's enough people that know that I'm doing a podcast and they have access to it, right? They know me, they've got the podcast, they know my business, everything. But now I'm trying to get to a point where I'm like, okay, I'm trying to get to circles beyond that. And the other thing is I can't necessarily rely on my guest. It's not on my guest to post. Like obviously if they post it, I'm 100% grateful for it, but I don't, there's no business, you know, collaboration thing, right? So I'm here hoping that they'll post, but even then, even if they do post, that the trickle down, I mean, like the amount of people that might like their post to come onto to the show is, as I have found, very, very small, and that's not their fault. That's just the fact of the matter, right? So how do you actually go from the people that you know, my mom, and then beyond that and to actually listen to this podcast?
I mean, I think that starts with being just absolutely clear on who your actual audience or intended audience is. A lot of times, like people say when they're just starting out, like, well, I don't know who my audience is because I don't have an audience. I have like my mom who's listening and I don't want her to be my audience. Or you have people who have like found your show that you're like, well, I don't actually want to serve those people. And so I think getting clear on that, who your intended audience is, who you actually want to speak to, it has so many benefits in terms of like the content you create, because when you know who you're speaking to, you can address those problems. Kind of like we talked about earlier with some of that translation aspect of taking content from elsewhere and just kind of, you know, putting your spin on it to your specific audience. But also, like, if you know what other online communities your audience or your ideal audience members engage with, what conferences they go to, what podcasts they listen to, all these types of things, you can start positioning yourself in those areas and start get exposure to people. And so a lot of times, like one of the great ways to do this is by just being engaged in other online communities where there are people, where your ideal audience participates. And when somebody asks a question, you can like give generously your answer and say like, hey, here's what I think you should do about this. If you want a lot more information, here's a link to a podcast episode I did on it, but you know, whatever I wrote here should be enough to get you started. And so thinking about that, a lot of times it feels like, oh, like it's just going 1-to-1. I want to go like 1 to 1,000 and just get somewhere where 1,000 people are going to see me. They're all going to come back to the podcast. And I just don't think that happens for almost anyone starting out, especially. And the thing too, with like online communities, you answer that one person's question, but 200 people might see that thread. And if you gave a great response, then they're also going to maybe click back to your website. And so I think that this is the thing where a lot of people who do this strategy, they just post the link to the podcast and they say, hey, I did a podcast on this, check it out. And so this is, again, where kind of the writing comes in, where if you can actually give people value in your response right on the platform and just offer, say, this should be enough for you, but if you want a 45-minute version of this where I go really in depth, then you can check out this. And then that's how you don't come across as sleazy or like you're just like trying to take everybody's attention and pull them all back to your thing. And you can still be like really generous with that, sharing your knowledge and also get people to be aware of you. So I think that that's one of the best ways to do it. The other ways would be taking part in, like, at this point, virtual summits or conferences, when those come back, looking to get either speaking gigs or just attending and networking with people. Or the one that is my favorite is guesting on other podcasts. And there are so many podcasts out there that you can 100%, no matter what stage you're at, you can find a show to be a guest on. That, and the great thing about podcasting is it's becoming so niche that you can be really, really, really specific about the audience that you're getting in front of when you're pitching these people.
And how would you go about pitching people to get onto your onto their podcast? Like, let's say someone like me, I would want to probably get onto some sort of marketing or business podcast. How do I go about finding that and getting myself on?
So we actually have a free mini course on podcast guesting that will be in the show notes. And so people can check that out there with screen shares and things like that. But I'll say that to that question, it still comes back to knowing who your audience is and knowing, like, okay, what podcasts do they listen to or what types of podcasts? And, you know, if you're polling and surveying your audience, they're probably picking shows that you don't have any chance of realistically getting on in the near future. They're probably like pretty big shows. But you can say, like, okay, well, they're these types of shows, they're this category. And so I can start looking for people who are just starting out, who might, you know, maybe I've got like 5 reviews on my podcast, or maybe I don't even have a podcast. That's the other thing. Like, you do not need a podcast to guest on podcasts. And really, for anyone looking to grow an audience, this is a great way to do it. And so you look for someone who maybe they've got like 15 episodes out, they've got like a handful of reviews, but they're not a massive show, and reach out to them. And I think it's really important to, when you're doing this, like, just keep in mind, what do you bring to the table and how will this benefit the host's audience? Because a lot of times people are thinking about themselves first and then they might think about what the host wants, but the host is thinking about their audience. So if you can make an appeal to like a topic they haven't talked about that would benefit the host's audience, then they're going to be like, oh yeah, I haven't talked about that before and I know my people would love that. That's the best way to actually, you know, make a pitch that's compelling. And so I always recommend, like, I know not everybody's going to listen through like 5 episodes of every show that they're pitching, but listen to something, like listen to 20 minutes of an episode and get a feel for the vibe. Every podcast host has got so many pitches for just completely misaligned pitches. Maybe you're getting pitched for a show that doesn't even have guests and they're like, hey, I love your show, I'd love to come on as a guest. And you're like, okay, you've never listened, I don't even have guests on the show. Or this show has been off the air for 3 years or something like that. And so, like, do your due diligence up front. And I always like to list, basically my strategy for this is listen until I can make a connection with something the host said. And if I can't find anything that I'm connecting with the host on, then it's probably not a good fit. And so if there's something we have in common, we both like, you know, rock climbing or something like that, that's going to go in my pitch. I want something to connect with them. And, you know, if I find that in the first minute, I'm going to listen to more than that to get a feel for the show. But if I, you know, have to listen through 1, 2, 3 episodes before I find something, I'll do it. And so I can make a compelling pitch to them and say, like, hey, I really loved what you said here. I applied this to, you know, my own business or my own life or whatever, and got this value out of it. So just thanks so much for what you're doing with the show. I appreciate it. And I know many other people do too. And so when you can kind of like get that connection and show that you've actually done your homework and you've listened to the show, people are much, much more receptive to, you know, hearing your actual pitch part of that email.
Pod fading is a term that describes shows that have stopped publishing after the 7th episode. Most people just stop producing podcasts because it takes a lot of time and energy just to make one episode. How do you push past this hardship and stay consistent in this podcasting medium?
Yeah, I mean, I think that we can talk about podcasting, but I think it's the same across any type of content. Like, building an audience anywhere, if there was an easy way to do it, everybody would be on there, and there isn't. Like, whether it's YouTube, whether it's blogging, whether it's podcasting, like, I've been blogging. I think I wrote in my newsletter this week, I was talking about it. It's like 230 articles this year. And I don't have a huge audience by any means. Like I get a decent amount of reads on my website and on Medium, but it's not a massive audience by any means. And that's a lot of content to put out. And of course, not everybody's going to be putting out an article a day. And obviously when you're putting out an article a day, probably the quality isn't at the level as if you spent a month on one mega article. But when it comes to, you know, blogging, YouTubing, podcasting, I think the thing that not enough people realize is that these are all platforms. Like building an audience is built on compounding returns, where I like to say for podcasting, but again, for anything, like you could spend a year doing it and it probably would just feel like it wasn't worth it. But if you stick with it for 3 years, it could entirely change your life. Because a lot of that time you're putting in all this effort up front, and often the snowball doesn't really start rolling and gaining momentum until you get past this point where it takes a long time to figure out how to actually optimize your workflow and your content and get to know your audience. And then things start to really gain speed and build for you. And once you get to this kind of critical mass, people start sharing it more, and it becomes a lot easier when your audience can start doing your marketing for you, basically. But it takes a long time to get there. And so I think I always tell everyone, every client who comes in the door or on a sales call, I'm like, how long are you committed to do this? Because, you know, you're going to be paying us to produce your show for, I'm guessing, you know, a year before you start seeing return. And if you stick with this for 2 and 3 years, you could see a massive return. But you have to be willing to kind of put in that investment, whether that's money or time or energy up front, and then stick with it when it gets difficult over the long haul. And one of the things you mentioned, consistency, there is the way I think about consistency. Everybody, especially with podcasting, I don't know why more with podcasting than other mediums, but everybody always talks about, like, any article you read on like how to grow a successful podcast, it's like, be consistent. But nobody ever expands on this, and it frustrates me to no end. I'm like, well, just be consistent.
Yeah. Please expand on this then.
And so for me, consistency is all about basically making a promise to your audience. And I think this is really important if you're ever going to ask for money from them at some point, where if you are saying like, here, I made this thing, will you give me $100 for it? Your audience doesn't know if it's going to be worth the $100. And so if you have a track record of, okay, I'm going to produce a podcast every week, but every third week I miss that date, or it gets pushed back, or whatever it is, that, you know, they probably don't even realize it, but that's kind of subtly eroding their trust in your ability to deliver. And so I think that delivering what you say you're going to deliver on time, on schedule, that just like bit by bit by bit by bit builds up trust over time that, like, okay, if you have made this commitment, you're going to deliver on it. And they can trust that, you know, when you do ask for money in the future, that it's going to be worth it. And so that's how I think about consistency and why it's actually important. And I think that that is, when you think about it that way, it feels like almost life or death. Like, I can't miss an episode because I don't want to risk that when I actually go to ask for something that means a lot to me, maybe it's like a $500 course or something like this that I'm hoping to get 15 people into or whatever it is, that, you know, if I've eroded their trust over time by not being consistent and then nobody buys, like, that's a lot higher stakes than just, you know, missing one podcast episode, but they can kind of, you know, lead into that.
Consistency brings that, the building of trust, but ultimately building trust with your audience, which I think that is really helpful, especially building a business. Because a business, you are serving them, but you are asking for money, which is a scary thing. And it does, especially what you and I do, we're doing client services, which is very much more of a relationship. Like, obviously we can build out products, but it's really the relationship that we're trying to sell. And if you're not trustworthy, that's hard to ask for a lot of money to do any creative service. So consistency, I love that. And I think this is kind of a ticket. It's almost a report card to show them, hey, this is, we're actually good at this. We can stick to what we're doing because we've done it here. So we can obviously do this for you. So that's valuable insight right there.
Yeah. And the thing that for me, I think podcasting, any type of long form content, I usually call it your kind of like foundational content or flagship content, where this is like your long form blog posts, YouTube videos, podcasts. It could be just your email newsletter, anything like that. And you could have kind of multiple platforms based on this. But for me, I like to think of these more as like trust building systems rather than audience growth systems. And you can build your audience through those platforms. But if you're just relying on putting out podcasts every week, your growth is going to be really slow because social media does not convert well into podcast listens. It's a good reminder that you're putting stuff out there. And if you can kind of repurpose content into useful pieces of native social media content, that can be helpful. But really you're relying on word of mouth to grow. And so I think things like we talked about before, where like guesting on other shows, speaking at virtual summits or conferences, or just general networking, like those are the audience growth systems. And then if you can get people back to your trust building system, which might be your podcast, and I think that podcasting is the really the best platform out there for building trust, that's where people actually get to know you and they actually get to like you and trust you. And over time, they're going to be like, okay, well, yeah, I'm ready to invest in this service now. And I know Matthew offers this and I've listened to 50 episodes of a show and I trust him. So now I feel like I know him and I know what to expect when we start a business relationship together.
I finish off the podcast with a segment called Open Mic. This is a chance for my guests to share anything they want. A lot of times, I feel like people get stuck behind the industry that they are in, but we are all human and have other interests outside of that. So this is a space for my guests to say whatever they want to say.
I like this section. And I think that it's a nice touch to allow people to talk about other things. And I think that that's something that we should all actually be doing more of. And I've had a couple of people on my podcast recently who I've just been fascinated with, and in like examining, like, what am I so interested in about? One guy, so he had a huge, one of the biggest diets in America at one point. And his name's Abel James. And he just had this, we had a fascinating conversation, but he's a very interesting guy. He's like won awards for his poetry and songwriting and also his diet and his podcast and his apps. And he was on a TV show and like all these things. And so there's been a few people like this where I've been like, We as humans, we as people who are following people online, yeah, there are people we follow because we want to learn a specific thing. And once we've learned that thing, we might not follow them anymore. But the people who we like connect with on all these different levels and who are just interesting people, like those are the people we stick with, because it doesn't matter if he's talking about his diet stuff or his music or whatever it is. I'm like, man, Abel, he's just a complex, interesting guy who makes me think about things. And so I think that that's really important to actually share more of that stuff with people, because if they're just coming to you for whatever it is that you talk about, like that's a transaction and it's a commodity a lot of times. There's somebody else talking about that. Whereas if you're the person in my case who talks about podcasting and maybe there's somebody else who's into like long distance cycle touring, they're gonna be like, well, this is my kind of person. Like you don't meet many long distance cycle tour people who then also happen to be into podcasting. And so the more kind of these threads you can put out there and connect with people on, and you're not going to connect with everybody on all of them, but if you just share what you're interested in and what gets you excited, the people who are also excited about those other things are going to be even more excited about this main idea that you're talking about, whether that's podcasting or growing an audience or whatever that might be.
This conversation with Jeremy taught me a lot about the importance of collaborating with other people and businesses to be seen and heard. It is never easy to build an audience, but if you can guest on a podcast or write for someone else, you can not only serve the other person, but you also can get access to their audience. You can follow Jeremy on Twitter, and he has generously put together a free course on how to become a guest on podcasts, which is linked in the show notes. I have personally gone through this course and I've already found success, and I hope that you find value from it as well. He also just launched a great podcast himself called How to Build a Better Wellness Biz. All of the links to find Jeremy will be in the show notes. Thank you, Jeremy, for being on the show. If you like this show, tweet me at Matthew Gutozzi. And if you really love this show, drop a rating on Apple Podcasts or your podcast listening app. A rating helps me build my audience around this show. So thank you in advance, and I will talk to you next week.